Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
Hello and welcome to the Shift with CJ podcast. Today I have a very interesting guest on the show for you. He's sitting right here, this very young and fit man who is going to inspire you to take some changes into your life and lean into your well-being, your health, your fitness, because he's got a program called Lean In Wellness.
Lean into life.
Lean into life. Okay, life and wellness. I tried to remember this before the podcast, but of course I couldn't remember it right. Apologies for that. Mr. Lee Han, welcome to the Shift with CJ podcast. How are you?
CJ, thank you for having me here, my friend. I'm excited to be here and excited for the chats and the conversations that we're going to talk about today.
Amazing, man. I've gone through your Instagram profile. You have enormous amounts of client testimonials. Your clients obviously love you. Your clients are obviously from all over the planet. So tell me, you could get into anything. Why did you get into fitness? What's your backstory?
That's a great question. Let's rewind the clock 15 years. Mm-hmm. So I first got into training when I was 16. Mm-hmm. I remember it indistinctively due to the fact that it was 3 weeks before my 17th birthday that I joined a boxing club. Mm-hmm. That's when my fitness and training started. So growing up, I was always in an environment where health was a priority and training was always a fundamental in my household, because my dad has been training his entire life.
Okay.
Like even now he's 57 years old, trains every single day. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have this, I suppose, misconception when it comes to getting in incredible shape and staying in shape year round. And I think a lot of people out there nowadays perceive that it's not actually possible, especially when you're a certain age. Dad's 57. He's probably walks around at 12% body fat in unbelievable conditioning, great health. So I always had a great role model and aspiration in that regard. Mm-hmm. And when I first got started to get into training seriously, is I actually started my career in boxing. And then that slowly transitioned to weight training. And then over the years, that's how I really, really fell in love into the overall process of, I suppose, discipline. Mm-hmm. You know, building up your overall level of discipline, where when it comes to building a world-class physique or something that you're really proud of, it doesn't come with ease. Mm-hmm. It's always choosing the hard option over the easier option. And I've always enjoyed the process of having to work really, really hard in order to attain something. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole ethos behind my coaching program that I have now. Fast forward the boxing, all the way training, went on to study in university, actually, funny enough, that had nothing to do with fitness. Mm-hmm. It was stereotypical. My parents want me to go to college, so I guess I'll go to college. Yeah. And I went to study business and entrepreneurship, and it was a 4-year degree. And I actually dropped out of college 4 months before graduating in my final year because I had a conversation with myself and I was like, this is not something that I want to do. Uh-huh. So therefore, why follow someone else's path or version of success or how to live? So literally handed in, or rang up the college.
You were so close.
I was so close, but you know, I just had a conversation. I was like,
yeah,
there is no end goal here. Mm-hmm. In terms of what I actually want to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm following a path here that I don't get fulfillment and purpose from. Mm-hmm. So therefore, why do it just because everyone else says that you should and follow the norm, so to speak? So anyway, long story short, dropped out of college, did a PT course. That was nearly a decade ago now. So I've been in the industry for near 10 years. Worked in the gym floor, PT for probably 4 or 5 years. Then obviously COVID happened, took my business fully online, did that for a couple of months. And then I decided to pack in all the in-person solely because from my experience of working online, I knew that I could help people to a far greater degree and capacity. There's a huge difference between just training and all the other aspects that you need to focus on when it comes to essentially reaching your full potential. But that's what my program is all about. It's for those individuals that don't want to just exist, but they want to excel across body, across mind, across performance, in their relationships, in their careers. Because why not want to reach your full potential and blast through your own self-imposed limitations? Mm-hmm. So that's essentially how we moved online during COVID, moved over here to Dubai 3 years ago. And again, that was essentially an example of leaning into life. I didn't know anyone here. I'd never been here before. I booked a one-way ticket, had the suitcase, and I was like, let's go over here and see what happens. And here we are 3 years later, and we have Lean Into Life, which is my online coaching program.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, why not lean into fitness or wellness or something, but you answered it yourself, because you're looking at these other dimensions that are not completely different and separated from health. Because if you are, you have a six pack, but you have crazy work stress or your relationship stuff, at the end of the day, it's going to catch up to you, correct?
100%. I want to focus on full circle. Like, why only focus on dropping body fat and building muscle tissue and getting in great shape? Would you not want to have an indestructible mindset? Would you not like to have maximized levels of energy? Would you not like to have unbreakable confidence? Would you not want to be able to back yourself in all situations, so then therefore you can move forward and pursue your dreams and embrace challenge and adversity? So that's why the program is essentially called Lean Into Life, because excellence has a cost.
Mm-hmm.
And anything worth doing involves hardship. It involves adversity, cost? Challenge.
What's the cost of excellence?
Embracing uncertainty,
mm-hmm.
embracing overwhelm, anxiety, mm-hmm. embracing all your fears. All these are negative emotions, whereas human beings, we perceive, because we feel a certain way and we have fear, or we have anxiety, or we have overwhelm, or we have these emotions that feel really, really uncomfortable, we then therefore tell ourselves a story that either A, something is wrong with us, or B, we are currently on the wrong path.
Mm-hmm.
I actually disagree with that. If you're currently operating in life right now and you're very frequently and consistently afraid, you second guess yourself, you have a bit of self-doubt, you wonder whether or not you're capable to move forward and deal with all the challenges and responsibilities, you are by default what I would describe as being in the arena. And that's what I say to all my clients. If you truly want to achieve championship in your life, and whatever that looks like, getting in shape, having a thriving relationship, becoming the best in your field in your career, you have to get in the arena. Yes, there is a time and place for spectating, which is what I refer to as being in motion, planning, strategizing, putting all these things in place. But action, you don't achieve anything without actually stepping in the arena, getting in the fight, taking action. And that's uncomfortable. That's always taking the hard left over the easy right, because everything that you want to achieve in life, and you'll probably be able to relate and resonate with this, and any of your listeners as well, just reflect on the past 12 months, the last 3 years, the last 5 years. Think back to a time in your life where you achieved something incredible that you never thought was possible. Did you do that with ease? Was that comfortable? Of course it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was uncomfortable, it was uncertain, and you had to deal with all these essentially feelings and emotion and thoughts that I'm essentially talking about here. But everyone is capable of getting in the arena.
Yes. Have you ever spoken to this whole topic about with your dad? Because your dad was obviously your great inspiration. And the way I'm seeing it now, and this is my own personal opinion, that on an average all over the world, men and women both, their confidence is going low. Testosterone, we know, is going low. There's a lot of hormonal endocrine disruptors, all of that stuff. But did people back in the day, did they still have same amount of fear and uncertainty that our generation is facing?
That's a great question. In my personal opinion, I think that nowadays, due to this hedonic lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
where it is so easy to pursue pleasure and instant gratification, it's made people weak.
Mm-hmm.
It's made people retreat and avoid and automatically have this automatic coping mechanism for dealing with life's challenges and turmoil, mm-hmm. where they avoid and they retreat and they take mm-hmm. the easy right over the hard left. Or
they bitch about it on social media.
100%, my friends. They whinge, they moan, and they complain.
Yeah.
They essentially become that victim of life. And look,
yeah.
I've been a victim in life. Mm. There's nobody listening line that who's never been, or listening back on this recording, who's never been in some sort of a victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But that should be empowering. Because then therefore, if I felt like that in the past and I no longer associate myself with that individual, then therefore anyone can overcome their own stories and limitations that are essentially presenting themselves.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree as well. There's a time and place that everyone goes through this whole victim personality, but then they get out of it. Life essentially puts us in this sphere of uncomfortable situations. And only once we pass that, once we pass that limitations, then things like, you know, success comes around, you can get to a new physique. It's not easy to diet. It's not easy to, like, our brain isn't wired that way. We don't want to do the hard stuff. But I completely agree your point. And that's the whole thing with being uncomfortable, right? You're outside your comfort zone. But any great thing, like you rightly said, in life comes after transitions. The transition period isn't very good, but essentially you're in a comfortable position and you dare to become it, take it one step more. And basically you're choosing more comfort over less comfort and using transitions. And only after transitions, like you maybe have a six pack, right? You might have a four pack before, but now you have a six pack. So another thing which caught my interest was you're also talking about relationships. You're also talking about work. So what have you seen that has changed recently? Because we know like after COVID and a lot of the dynamics have changed. Has that affected your personal coaching with your clients?
I feel COVID was one of the best things that could have happened for me personally. Mm-hmm. Because if COVID didn't happen, I never would have went online. Mm-hmm. I'd probably still be working in the gym and I wouldn't be impacting people's lives at the degree that I'm impacting right now. Don't get me wrong, I still had a good level of impact and influence with the clients I was working with in the gym. Mm-hmm. But it was more so just training, lifestyle factors, sleep, nutrition. It's very hard to help and support your clients with the stuff we're talking about here when you're only seeing them in the gym 2 to 3 times per week. Where now, as a result of building my online coaching program, my clients have support not only from me, but also from a number of coaches that work for me inside our program. We've got a full-time psychotherapist and mindset coach with nearly 15 years experience in her field. We've got a full-time vision, performance, leadership, and behavioral change expert as well. And also a high-performance coach who looks after any of the goals that our clients want to work towards outside of physical attributes. So performance goals, half marathons, marathons, triathlons, Ironmans, whatever it is. And as I was saying, COVID has been a blessing for me because I never would have been able to go online and impact people's lives to a far greater degree. So to answer your question, it's actually been a huge benefit and positive for me and also for the clients that I work with, because you're essentially able to provide them the support, the accountability, the plan, and all the other stuff that they need to almost ingrain and implement into their lives outside of the gym. Don't get me wrong, training is important, but there are so many other pieces of the puzzle when it comes to excelling and not existing. And you said there a couple of moments ago that we're not programmed to lean in and embrace discomfort and challenge. Right, from a survival standpoint, we're programmed to survive, to exist. I want to excel. Mm-hmm. Everything I put my hands on, I want to be able to operate 110%. I want to be able to build up the skill level, the belief and the overall capabilities that if I want to truly dominate any area of my life, body, mind, professional relationships, whatever it is, I know that I can do that. I can work towards that. And this all comes back to your mindset, your belief systems and your identity, which I believe is one of the most important things when it comes to long-lasting change. Like we spoke before we hit record on this podcast today around, although there is so much information out there nowadays around fat loss, calories, calorie deficit, like people have over information and under implementation issues. That's the problem. It's not lack of knowledge, it's lack of implementation.
Too much knowledge out.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah. Oh, it's over education, over knowledge, but under implementation.
Mm.
Your listeners will listen to that and say, that doesn't really make any sense. If I always thought and perceived that knowledge of the issue, if all the knowledge is out there, why do I still struggle to implement?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest reasons I believe that you need to focus on in order to create long-lasting change is your mindset and specifically your identity. Mm. So how you see yourself, who you are, and how you speak to yourself. We go back to talking about that victim mentality. It's a very, very fixed mindset. We talk to ourselves in vocabulary of I can't, I'm not able, this just won't work out, I'm going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
A growth mindset. I am going to overcome these challenges. I am capable. I will succeed. Anybody is capable of either of those avenues, but it's based upon the stories that you actually tell yourself. And the more you can actually work on this inner dialogue and improving the conversation you have with yourself, removing and reducing negative self-talk, not eliminating it, because it never goes anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
My clients always ask me, Lee, you must never have self-doubt, you must never talk to yourself in any sort of negative manner. I'm like, that's not true. It doesn't exist. Everyone experiences that, and that normalizes it.
Mm-hmm.
Because those
common humanity,
yes,
right?
Yeah, we're all human.
Thing, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, that was a bit off topic, but I went in there on a few different.
I mean, it's good what you said because, you know, it brings up so much aspects of how you are as a person and what can people expect when they go into a training program or like a life program with you guys. Tell me something. How many or let's divide it, right? Out of the people that come to you for or your program and all of your coaches, what are people's major goals?
Everyone joins our program initially wanting to get into better physical shape, whatever that looks like. For the most part, it's dropping weight and dropping body fat. But why do most people want to drop weight and drop body fat? Because they want to feel more comfortable and more confident in their own skin. Initially, that's what they come on board for.
And that's why you have a program that says you can lose up to 20 pounds in 90 days.
Exactly. Drop up to 20 pounds of body fat within the first 90 days, maximize your energy and boost your confidence.
How does that happen? How do you drop 20 pounds of body fat in 90 days?
Do you know what? It's not.
You have a free blueprint, right? On
You can. Yeah, you can go to my Instagram, Mr. Lee Hands. You can download our free blueprint inside my bio. And it's not as hard as people make it out to be. What did we just agree on there a couple of moments ago? People don't have an under information problem. They have an under implementation problem. People need accountability and support. Do I give my clients advice and help and support around calorie deficits, nutrition, meal plans, all that sort of stuff? Yes. But they've had that previously in the past, but they failed. So how is this time different? In my opinion, it's providing a very, very supportive environment and culture where we actually embrace challenge, setbacks, and failure. Anyone on the line right now, think back to a moment in time where you tried to get into shape and drop body fat. You probably went through a period of time where you were progressing and you were winning and you were making consistent progress for a handful of weeks. What was your response when you had a week from hell and nothing went to plan and you put on some weight and you didn't get any training sessions in? For the most part, when individuals experience that with any sort of support and accountability and they don't have anyone else helping them understand those situations with a high level of intelligence, they perceive that they're going to fail. So then therefore we create a story for ourselves. Well, if I'm going to fail and we fulfill this false prophecy, if I'm going to fail in the future, then why should I keep showing up and taking action right now, moving into next week? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. And it's essentially no point doing it. So then they revert back to their old destructive habits, not exercising, not moving, not focusing on the nutrition, leaning back into instant gratification and things that distract them essentially via pleasure. It could be working even more. It could be taking on more responsibilities and work, which as a result leads to overall detriment to your health and your physical progress. It could be consuming calorie dense processed foods. It could be over consumption alcohol, for example. And having that healthy culture and environment for individuals where you embrace struggle, you embrace challenge, and you embrace failure rewires their thought process around what success looks like. Because it all comes back to expectations. Right? If you're starting a health and fitness journey and you expect that you're going to have setbacks and you expect that weeks aren't going to go to plan and you expect that you're going to put on weight even though you feel like you're doing everything right, then therefore when it does happen, you have a lower response to it because it was expected in the first place.
Because you're conditioning yourself.
Exactly. And then therefore it doesn't interfere with your actions as much and you can continue staying in the arena, keeping the blinkers on, blocking out all the noise and moving forward and taking action. Because in reality, if everyone who struggles with their health and fitness right now actually took more consistent action with a less level of intensity, they would currently be where they want to be right now. But most people try to have aggressive implementation with very short consistency and then therefore they end up back to round zero, starting all over again.
That's a straight flat line. Just they go up straight and then it's just stable and then there's a decline. And I see this all the time. And I've been myself, I've been in the fitness. I'm 32 years now. I started when I was 15, like going to the gym. So I've been in this space for a very long time. And most of the times, my friends, my family, they were like, oh, how are you consistent? I'm like, I'm just a little bit passionate. I don't do it for the body. I don't do it for anything else.
I don't do it for outcome. Don't do it for the outcome.
I just do it because it makes me feel great. And you know, when you see exercise or being fit or being healthy, not as a daily chore, but as a sense of, yeah, you can call it pleasure because you have endorphins in the brain and you know, a lot of things happen. But when you see that it helps you accelerate at everything in life, then it's something that you don't want to lose.
I totally agree. You re-engineer what success looks like for you. Because if you're always focused on the outcome, then therefore, as a result of that, you're always going to be moving the goalposts. And we fall into this narrative and story that we tell ourselves, I will be happy when. I'll be happy when I drop the weight. I'll be happy when I get the promotion. I'll be happy when I achieve or get into that relationship. And I know, me personally speaking, maybe you'll be able to relate to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you achieved in the past and you were massively underwhelmed when you achieved it? We initially perceive that when I achieve this, it's going to give me all the happiness I want.
Mm.
And then when you do achieve it, it actually didn't make you feel the way you thought it was going to make you feel in the first place.
Mm.
And then you realize the most enjoyment came out of the actual process, the journey, building the skills, learning more about yourself, seeing what your response is like to setbacks, challenge, failure, all of these things. So that's an important point as well, because ultimately that's what leads to a lot of destruction with people on their health and fitness journey. They will get to a place where they will lose X amount of weight, but because they've not actually done the more important work around, let's say, their mindset on that journey and the stuff we're talking about here in your beliefs and your inner narratives. As a result, you'll get to that point and you'll either say, that was so much work to get here, it did not make me feel the way I thought it was going to make me feel in the first place. So now, as a result of that, I'm going to revert back to my old destructive habits and coping mechanisms, because they're the things that give me instant pleasure and distractions in the first place, which ultimately deteriorate our health, which is lack of exercise, lack of movement, lack of poor sleep, and eating and overeating food and alcohol.
Or, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, or on the other end of that, it will be, okay, well, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
If this didn't make me happy, then obviously I have to work towards something else. I need to lose another 10 pounds, another 5 pounds, another 20 pounds. And you just fall in that constant vicious cycle. And the outcome is the exact same, because you've actually focused on the symptom rather than the actual problem.
There's a term in Sanskrit language. It's called santosha, which means contentment. And what this describes is not only in your fitness, like, because you described all aspects of life, but we are always looking for that next goal to achieve, because again, you think it's going to be that one, but if you talk to the same person 10 years later or 5 years later, even after their marriage, even after their kids, they're just like, oh man, this is just going to be a vicious cycle. But if you can be content in everything that you have, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't work for something, you should work for something. We're teleological beings, we have goals, we achieve goals and we feel great, we get this dopamine hit in our brain. But at the same time, no matter where you are, if you can just bring that sense of gratitude and contentment, this is going to get you so much more. Because even, you know, when we talk about like things outside the realm of fitness, whether it's success, whether it's buying a car, how many people have bought a car and like a month later, they're just stuck in traffic, but they're like, oh, I hate being car that they would love to be in. They're just inside, but it doesn't. Yeah. It just, and happiness also, like when you get something, there is a setback point, and there's like, I think it's about a week, and then your happiness goes, it's a bounce back period where it elevates and it goes back to baseline.
Yeah.
So for fitness as well, I think this is a great thing, because a lot of people, whether it's buying a Gucci bag or it's also different perspectives, right? Because if happiness is in the object or the item or the car, then it should mean that if either one of us own it, we're going to be happy. But it could be happiness to you. But for me, I could be like, oh, okay, you know what? It's just a piece of thing. So happiness isn't really there in the object, but it's somewhere hiding underneath you. And the time that you reach something is just like a cloud that disappears in front of you, and you just see it much closer. But eventually, all that you need to be happy is already within you. And just looking constantly for, or like putting those goals probably is not the best thing. But yeah, achieving them are great.
I totally agree. That's a great point. And like, what will make one individual happy and fulfilled will be completely different to another individual, because it will be all be based upon your values. And your values are created from, for example, the environment you grew up around and essentially the people that you're around to a certain degree. Values can definitely change over time, and different things can bring different levels of happiness to different individuals. What we want here is we actually want more longer term instances of happiness. When I say happiness, I don't mean like a kid waking up on Christmas morning. That's not realistic, right? It's just this steady state where you feel somewhat good the majority of the time. You don't feel absolutely amazing, but for the most part, you feel decent. You have your bad days, we feel like crap, 100%. And for the most part, you've got that steady playing ground, and the happiness will never come from external sources. It will be, it, you will pursue external sources to distract you, to make you think and believe that you need those things to feel a certain way. But as you said there, every single person on this, listen back to this recording, whether they realize or not, you currently have everything you already need to feel a certain way. That's not to say that you shouldn't want to go out and pursue more of yourself and to work towards goals with your career, with your relationships, if you do value growth. Not everyone values growth. Not everyone values personal development. Not everyone values reaching their full potential, and that's totally cool. So all the stuff that I'm talking about here won't land with everybody. That's totally fine, because I'm not speaking to those individuals. We're speaking to those people that actually want to reach their full potential, and they know deep down they're capable of so much more. So working towards goals is important, but more importantly, the goal does not determine or dictate who you are as an individual. It only makes things better. It makes things better, but it doesn't determine who you are. Your body is the least impressive thing about you. We live in a day and age now where everyone is obsessed with how they look. If you see my Instagram, people will probably say, you probably said it, this guy is obsessed with how he looks. Maybe he loves himself.
I said that you look great. I didn't say that you're upset, but I said you look great.
But some people will look at people in shape and say, God, that guy must live in the gym.
Exactly.
He must have a big ego. He must love himself. The body is the least impressive thing about me. Any of the clients I work with, I tell them, your body is the least impressive thing about you. There's so much more to you as a human being. But your body is there to serve you. You are not there to serve your body. Most people get that twisted.
All of them.
Yes. The body is there to improve your life, benefit your life, not take away or make it harder. It's there to actually serve you. But you're not there to serve the body.
I completely agree. So we touched on two or three things briefly, which was fat loss and muscle gain and being fit. That's what most of your clients come to you for. What are your top tips, apart from the whole support aspect and the mindset aspect? So if someone's listening to this and they want to burn some more fat, I mean, you guys could go to his Instagram profile and download the guide. But if someone's listening to this, they're driving and they cannot download it, what would be your top 2 to 3 tips?
Great question. I'll break this down into 3 pillars. Pillar 1, I dial in my nutrition. So what I would do is I would follow a calorie controlled diet, and I would follow some sort of approach in terms of a deficit of maybe 10 to 15% starting off. If you wanted to drop more weight and more body fat faster, that's totally fine. You would just have to follow a bigger deficit, like let's say maybe 30% below your maintenance. However, I wouldn't recommend that to people who maybe don't have the best relationship with food, or maybe they struggle with their appetite and cravings because they have very, very high stress and workload. There's always a middle ground, all gray area. That's why it's very personalized, specific, based upon the individuals. So some of the advice I'm going to give here, I'm just going to speak from a general standpoint. First of all, as I said, nutrition, I follow a calorie control based diet, aiming for anywhere from 10 to 15% of a deficit. I would follow whole nutrient dense food sources for 80% of the time. I would include processed quote unquote unhealthy foods for 20% of my calories, because then therefore I'm not going to feel like I'm in a very, very restrictive approach, and it's going to celebrate and promote longevity. Because I don't know about you, but I certainly don't want to live without chips and burgers and chocolate. I eat that on a weekly basis.
Thanks for being honest.
Yes. Because I've done the other side of the coin where I was extremely restrictive, and hey, didn't enjoy the process, definitely don't want to spend the rest of my life that way. I would also focus on a minimum of 3 to 4 liters of water per day. Obviously, that's going to depend male, female weight, but that's a good kind of benchmark. That's the nutrition and hydration. Next, pillar number 2, I'd focus on exercise and daily movement. So I'd aim for a minimum of 3 strength training workouts in the gym per week, aiming for anywhere from 45 to 60 minutes. You don't have to spend hours in the gym. And on top of that, I would also aim for more daily movement every single day. There's a lot of focus on the infamous 10,000 steps per day. I'm not against that.
I think 10,000 steps?
10,000 steps. Yeah. So a lot of people talk about that on social media. Get your 10,000 steps in per day. If you're not hitting that, it's a failure. I think it's a great starting point for people. It gives people a target. I'm not against it. But hey, if you've only been doing 2,000 steps every single day because you're a parent and you're working full time and you're taking care of your kids and you're looking after the house and you're doing all the cooking and you're only getting in maybe 2,000 per day, why not aim for 4,000 instead of 10,000? Would you agree that's a much more realistic expectation?
Yes. Do you know how does this 10,000 number come in?
I honestly don't.
So in 1989 or 1991, a set of Japanese researchers, they weren't even researchers, they just wanted to release the pedometer, and they're like, no, we have to calibrate it at some point. So it was a random number that was selected, that was 10,000. And then after that, just they were the first ones to launch it. So everyone just caught up to that trend. Yeah. But right now, like you said, like for some people, 5,000 can do the thing. It's also another thing, like you mentioned, there are other things that we do in our life which contribute to this non-exercise calorie thermogenesis need. And, you know, walking, moving your hand, you know, pushing something, pursuing something, all of these are burning calories, and these burn more calories than a structured 1 hour gym workout.
100%. Your daily movement, i.e. steps, is going to, and even just like fidgeting, moving, all that sort of stuff, is going to burn way more energy and calories. It's going to make up the main bulk of the amount of energy that you actually burn in a 24 hour period, way more than working out at the gym. I say to my clients all the time, you don't lift weights to burn body fat. You, if you're lucky, might burn and expend 300 calories in a tough weight training session. Even if you think you train really, really hard, it's not going to be much more than that. And we train to build strength, build mental resilience. That's why I fell in love with training. It's one of the biggest reasons as to why I embrace so much challenges now, because you're constantly putting yourself in an environment when you're weight training where you have to challenge your own limitations. You can't do an extra rep. You can't lift that weight. You can't push yourself any harder. And over time, all of these small wins just stockpile. And then as a result, they transcend to other areas of your life. So we covered the nutrition, covered the workouts, covered the daily movement. The last thing that I would focus on, pillar three, and it's probably the most important pillar that I would say the majority of people never pay attention to, and that's rest and recovery. And it's going to be sleep. Sleep is number one. It's more important than nutrition. It's more important than your training. So if right now you're not getting a minimum of seven and a half hours of sleep every single night, and I mean asleep, not just being in bed. If you're currently not doing that, focus on that first before anything else.
So watching Netflix on bed doesn't count.
Definitely not.
Okay.
I'm very strict on evening routines with myself and my clients. I like to make it realistic though.
Yep.
Of course, Netflix at nighttime is enjoyable, especially when you've had a long working day. Mm-hmm. I've had clients that have come to me and said, Lee, I literally work 9 till 7, and when I come home, that's the only time I have with my partner to essentially watch something. Is it realistic to tell an individual like that, hey, tell your partner, your coach said you can't watch Netflix and you can't spend time with her, or even finding something else, maybe finding something else to do together isn't realistic. So there's many ways to maneuver around that. But yeah, long story short, definitely don't want to be allowing artificial blue light into your eyes when you're in the bed, because as a result of that, that's going to decrease and limit serotonin and the melatonin sleep hormones. And as a byproduct of that, it's going to increase cortisol, because they're antagonistic hormones. If I have high cortisol, I have reduced sleep hormones. So at nighttime, we want low cortisol and high sleep hormones. Same first thing in the morning. Why do we want to expose ourselves to daylight exposure as fast as possible when we wake up, for anywhere from 15, 20, 25 minutes? It's because the sunlight is actually going to start to increase more cortisol hormones, stress hormones. Yes, there's a benefit to that. And as a byproduct of that, your sleep hormones that are antagonistic, your sleep hormones that are antagonistic are going to actually reduce. So it's going to help you with overall better energy as you get up moving throughout the rest of the day. So nutrition, exercise, daily movement, and overall sleep quality and quantity.
I love the last pillar, sleep and recovery, because it goes so unnoticed. And most of the people, you're right, they could overreach in the gym, they could overtrain in the gym, but most of the times it's under recovery that doesn't allow them to either put on muscle or lose weight. They could be fit as hell, but still, they're achieving those kind of goals. And, you know, I started the first company that looks at circadian biology in Dubai, and we do our blue light blocking glasses and all of that.
I have them. Yeah, them with my clients, blue light blocking glasses.
Yeah.
If you have to work at night, if you're watching TV with your partner.
That's what I had here, because this light was on my face, and then I realized it's on your face, so I just removed it. But also, like, cortisol in the night, one of the other things it does is it increases glutamate, and glutamate in the brain can affect levels of things like leptin and adiponectin. So what it basically means is there are regions of the brain that can be stimulated through blue light, which increase appetite.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be doing that, especially in the night, because there is, again, the whole circadian biology thing. You shouldn't be eating. I don't know, what's your views on this? For me, for most of the people, unless this is the ideal scenario, yeah? I'm talking about the ideal thing.
Idea.
So the ideal thing is not to eat late at night.
Yes.
You give your body a 3 to 4 hour break so you can digest, your HRV goes up. What's your...
Yeah, there's a great strategy I implement with my clients, and all your listeners can implement it right away from tonight. It's called the 3-2-1 principle. 3 hours mm-hmm. before bed, no food. 2 hours before bed, no work. 1 hour before bed, no electronics. Mm-hmm. If you simply implement that pre-bedtime, because again, it creates a structure.
Yep.
Sometimes it's hard to implement all the information out there because it's very, very overwhelming. Having a framework like that blocks out all the noise, and you literally just implement that. Mm-hmm. And it allows you then to increase your quality of sleep, because there's a huge difference, as you know, between quantity and quality.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell people, hey, you need to focus on your sleep, they straight away say to themselves, oh, so I need to sleep more. But you could be having 7.5 hours sleep per night, and your quality could be extremely poor, and you could be spending the majority of your time asleep in very, very light stages of sleep. Because as you know, we move through 90-minute cycles
mm-hmm.
at nighttime, and ideally we want to be aiming for 5 90-minute cycles, which would be 7.5 hours, mm-hmm. right? And we want to be able to make sure that we're getting down into those deeper stages of sleep to aid with rest and recovery and overall hormone function. And in order to do that, we have to have effective and adequate strategies in place prior to bedtime. And if you do have a lot of food prior to falling asleep, and like, let's say it's an hour and a half, you're still going to have a lot of digestive juices that are going to be activated and trying to break down that food. And as a result of that, when you actually do fall asleep, your body is still going to be trying to release those juices to break down that protein, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, it's going to cause you to wake up throughout the night. Or some of your listeners might experience stuff like waking up throughout the night and having heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that some of my clients have struggled with in the past. And then we assess the lifestyle factors. And it's like, okay, you're actually eating a lot of food prior to bed. So as a result, your body's still trying to digest that, even though you're asleep. And it's actually waking you up and causing that heartburn. And simply pulling back your eating window to 2 or 3 hours prior to bedtime can improve that situation and increase the quality of your overall sleep. And then that's going to have a huge carryover
mm-hmm.
to your daily decisions. Like, if we were to break this down as simple as possible, why do people not succeed? Why do people not drop weight? Why do people not get into shape? Their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
They're making more wrong decisions than good decisions. What dictates your decision-making capabilities?
I don't know. Good night of sleep.
I don't know about you, but when I have a bad night of sleep,
yeah.
When I have a bad night of sleep, I am so much more likely to overconsume food, to reach for more calorie dense processed foods.
Carbohydrates
especially. I'm more inclined to not want to go out and get my workout in, not wanting to move as much. I'm more inclined to be distracted a lot more through my phone, through social media, all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I say sleep is number one, because if we can actually improve the quality and quantity of your sleep as a byproduct of that, your decision-making capabilities are going to improve tenfold. And then all of a sudden, wow, I'm actually losing a lot of weight now. I'm getting incredible shape and I'm finding it a lot more efficient, a lot easier than I did previously.
And I don't feel like having that cake anymore.
Exactly. And like, that's an example of focusing on the actual problem rather than symptom.
Yeah.
Symptom is I'm not losing weight because I'm overeating. Okay, but like, why are you overeating?
Mm.
That's where the real problem is. Are we overeating because we currently have poor coping mechanisms and strategies in place to be able to deal with stress? If so, how can we create healthier coping mechanisms so then as a result, it doesn't lead to detriment to your overall health and your physical health? It could be something as simple as what we talked about there, identifying, is it actual a sleep quality issue?
Mm-hmm.
And then therefore, if we improve that, all of a sudden we've solved that problem. And then it's easier for you to be able to stick to your calorie targets and make better decisions throughout the day.
And you also mentioned stopping work. That was number two. So 2 hours before work, 2 hours before sleep, you stop working. And 1 hour before sleep, you stop electronics. Now, we know electronics is because of the blue light. Why work?
Why work? Mm-hmm. Really good question. We want to be able to put ourselves in an environment where we limit stimulus. So when you're working, and this goes for social media as well, mm-hmm. playing video games, whatever it is, especially work, you're creating a lot of stimulus there. And although you may enjoy work, it is still creating a lot of stress. It's
mm-hmm.
creating a lot of cortisol. What did we just say? We want to be able to reduce cortisol at nighttime. And what we tend to find is with the individuals that we work with, they're very successful, maybe in one area of their lives, maybe for professional capacity or personal capacity, but they haven't mastered their health. And they know that their body is the gatekeeper to everything else. And when you are so ambitious and driven and you want to be your best, you can go the extra mile always and do extra work. And think about that from a nighttime perspective. You want to make sure that you're in a relaxed state so you can get to sleep in an efficient time. So then therefore you can spend the entire night asleep without waking up. It's very hard to do that if I'm responding to work emails, I'm dealing with issues with a team, maybe I'm...
You don't like your boss.
...putting stuff together with my boss, yeah. And it just creates a lot of adrenaline, it creates cortisol, it creates a lot of overwhelm, a lot of anxiety, and like there are the
too
things...
Too much sympathetic nervous system going.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And there are things that we want to be able to mitigate and reduce prior to bedtime, because what happens if you don't? You will take a very, very long period of time to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
I've had so many clients over the years that take an hour and a half, 2 hours. I've literally had clients that have come to me that have not had a full night's sleep in probably 2 years.
Wow.
They've taken 2 hours to get to sleep. They wake up several times throughout the night.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the stuff that we implemented and focused on are all the stuff that we're actually talking about on this call. And a big thing was limiting stimulus and limiting work prior to bed. So that's essentially why we want to be able to reduce that prior to bedtime, 2 hours before bed, so we can put ourselves in a position where we're actually getting ready for rest and recovery.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. And everyone who's listening, please take notes. I've told you many times, but now there's someone else who's saying the same thing. So you guys should take it seriously. Work is not everything. I mean, it could be for some people, even if you're very passionate. It does create some kind of a disturbance. So now we've spoken about all this. I would love to know a day in your life, because seems like you've got, looks like you're going to talk to us about some routines and rituals and, you know, certain things that you have placed for yourself, because, you know, talking to you, you're a person who likes discipline, and discipline always comes with certain practices. You always have to say no. You have to say no more than you have to say yes to most of the things. So that allows for, or not, that requires a lot of planning and a lot of like boundaries. So talk to us. We want to know a day in your life. What do you do? What supplements are you taking? Like, how does it, morning sunlight, all of that stuff.
Perfect. So,
you just woke up.
Yeah. So before all that, anyone that I look up to, or anyone that your listeners or yourself might look up to for aspiration, or people that achieve ultimate success in their domains, avenues of the things that they're involved in, if we were to look at any of their lives and we actually got a snapshot and we're a fly on the wall for 24 hours a week, our feedback would be, wow, that's actually really, really boring. Because a lot of people perceive structure and routine and regiment sort of schedules as boring. My life, realistically, even though I live over here in Dubai, my clients and other people might think it's a very exciting life and all this stuff. Realistically, every single day for me, every single week is more or less the same. And I love that.
I feel
I'm
you.
I'm a creature of habit. I love structure. I love routine. And I'm absolutely meticulous with my planning, my organization, and my productivity, because I'm such a huge advocate of high performance. And to me, high performance means operating above the standard norms year round consistently. Anybody can show up inconsistently in peaks and troughs at a decent level. Me and my clients that I work with, I want to be able to operate above the standard norms and above everyone else in terms of performance and output consistently every single week, every single month of the year. And in order to do that, planning needs to be locked in place. So I have a ritual every Saturday before 2 p.m. I will have the following week fully planned out. First thing I will do, I will schedule in fun. So rather than getting into all the work tasks, all scheduling, okay, Lee, what does fun look like next week for you? When can we schedule that in? Even if that's scheduling time with my partner or my relationship, because that's going to increase overall enthusiasm and excitement moving into the week ahead.
The life juices.
Exactly. So that's number one. And after that, I will get really, really clear on work tasks, business tasks, things that clients need in terms of urgent and important. Important will always get done first, and urgent will get done second. The majority of people get that wrong. They do urgent first, get back to all my emails rather than working on the important, huge project, i.e. the big rocks. So we break that down into big rocks and small rocks. And I'm not sure if you've ever read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
I haven't read it, but I've heard, like, I've read bits and pieces, but not the entire book.
Really, really good book. I would definitely recommend it for yourself and your listeners. And there's a great example it gives in there, and they actually have a video on YouTube around this, and it's a lady trying to put all of her life into three or four jars. Right, let's say three jars. Let's say it's professional, personal, health. And she puts in all the small rocks, i.e. the sand first, instead of the big rocks. So she put in the urgent before the important. And as a result, at the end, she was left with all these big rocks, her health, her relationships, and other things that essentially didn't fit into the jars, i.e. her life. If she did it the other way around, big rocks first, obviously we put that into a jar, all of the smaller rocks that are sand, it's naturally going to fit around it. So as a result, down to better prioritization and boundaries and focusing on the things that are actually going to drive the needle forward in terms of your success and your growth, it's going to allow you to essentially achieve championship and everything across the board. So that's a big thing for me. That's why I wanted to go into a little bit of depth there, because any client that comes on board, that's always one of the most important things we focus on first. Let's really, really identify what your week currently looks like, and let's put a plan in place so you're crystal clear on when you're going to do your training, when you're going to do one, two, three, so you have clarity. If I have clarity, it reduces overwhelm and it sets clear intentions on what I actually need to focus on this week. So then therefore, I limit distractions. The whole point of planning, I want to limit my distractions, so then therefore, I can be more consistent with my actions.
Completely agree.
So that's number one, that's planning. Outside of that, daily routines, morning routine. I'm not a huge advocate of these 90 minute or 2 hour, 3 hour morning routines. I just don't think it's realistic for me. I'm not against it. If you can do that, absolutely unbelievable.
Well, so you mean like you wake up in the morning and you have a set routine for 90 minutes? Okay.
No, I don't. I don't have 90 minutes or 2 hours. It's just not realistic for me.
Okay. What are people doing in 90 minutes?
Well, we hear about all this stuff now on social media. Morning routines, wake up, do an ice bath, do your yoga, do your meditation, do your journal, all these things. I'm not against doing those things, but it has to be realistic. Like if you're listening to this right now and you're married, you have three kids and you work full time and your kids are all under the age of five. You're going to be doing well if you can just wake up in the morning, have a coffee and spend 5 minutes.
If you could just sleep at night, that would be your best thing.
Yeah, and a morning routine for an individual like that is waking up, having a coffee and literally looking at what your day looks like for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And maybe doing a bit of journaling for 5 minutes, if even. Like, it's not an overwhelming morning routine. So for me, wake up, toilet, liter and a half of water, supplements, omega fish oils, alpha GBC. Then I will
no coffee,
and I will make sure that I consume a liter and a half of water prior to having caffeine.
With electrolytes?
Not with electrolytes.
Okay, because I see your bottle has something. Is it amino acids or
people always ask me, they're like, Lee, that must be like BCAAs or some like gym thing. It's actually not. I'm not a massive fan of water. It's actually Robinson's, you know, dilutable.
Ah, really?
That's all it is. Tastes better. Yeah. If anyone struggles with drinking water and you don't really like it, that's a great little hack. Get some Robinson's Diluvo, and it's a game changer when you're dieting because it feeds the sweet tooth, so to speak. So wake up, water, supplements, listen to an inspiring podcast, and then I'll go for a walk. Morning routine generally takes around 30 minutes, and the reason why I go and get that morning routine is because I want to be able to get that daylight exposure first thing in the morning to be able to help with my night sleep that night, because that's the most important thing. People think that in order to improve a night's sleep, it's what you do before bed. Yes, that is true, but what's most important is actually what you do in the morning prior to nighttime, because getting out and getting that daylight exposure is going to naturally reset your natural circadian rhythm, so then therefore you can find it easier to be able to get to sleep at nighttime. So that's generally what my morning routine would be: 30 minutes, all filler, no fluff, and then I get straight into work for the day. For me, from an overall output perspective, I like to break up my tasks in maybe 4 hour work blocks, and that could be maybe 90 minutes, 60 to 90 minutes on each task. Put the phone away, again, limit distractions, and I essentially just get to work. Outside of that, I'm always clear on when I'm going to train during the week. I know what days I'm going to train, what it's going to consist of, how long the training session is actually.
How many days are you training?
That's an interesting question. I train a lot. So I've recently just started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Cool.
So I think we're actually in the same gym, UFC gym downtown.
You were there? Yes, I am kind of in the, I'm in UFC and Team Nogueira both.
Oh, you do jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
What belt?
Blue belt.
I'm there.
Yeah.
So I literally just started jiu-jitsu in the UFC.
It's quite addictive, right?
Addictive. In June.
Yeah.
So only about 3.5 months ago, I was actually just over in Egypt last week.
Uh-huh.
In last Egypt, I flew over to compete in the Africa Intercontinental.
Sweet. Yeah, I saw your picture
tournament.
The trainer, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was actually with one of the fighters in the club.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a blue belt. He was flying over. He asked me to come. I said, you know what? I might only be doing it 3.5 months, but let's use this as an opportunity to test myself.
And get uncomfortable.
Exactly. And I think putting yourself in extremely uncomfortable, stressful environments is one of the best things anyone can do to really see what you're truly capable of. Because anyone can talk a big game mm-hmm. when things are going to plan and they're winning and they're essentially in comfort. But one of the best signs to an individual's character is how they respond under immense stress. Do you panic, retreat, and avoid? Or do you stand strong in the chaos, move forward, and get even more in the fight?
Mm.
So I went over there as my first competition. As you know, as a white belt, you can be a white belt for a year, year and a half, even two years. Right? 2 years, right? So again, I've only been doing it for 3.5 months. Went over to Cairo, Egypt. Never been in that country before in my entire life. Went over with one other individual who's a blue belt and he was fighting. And it was in a big dome stadium in Cairo. And I'm not sure if you competed before, but you know AJP, biggest organization for jiu-jitsu. It's like the Premier League of football. They don't do anything in short.
Mm-hmm.
Like the venue, the event, the referees, how professional it was, under the lights, all of that stuff. So I went over, I competed in my division, 85 kilos, white belt. And there was 12 people in my division.
Mm-hmm.
So a decent number of opponents. It was split into two seeds. My first fight was against an Egyptian. I ended up dominating him the entire fight and winning 9-0.
Wow.
Which qualified
Congratulations.
Thank you. Which qualified me straight to the semi-finals.
Mm.
However, in the semi-finals, I was put up against the favorite to win the competition.
Mm-hmm.
He has competed in 6 competitions prior
mm-hmm.
and has a number of wins.
Mm-hmm.
Went in there and gave him my best, and he ended up defeating me 9-1. I was just massively outskilled
mm-hmm.
across the board. So lost against him 9-1. But again, I made sure that I gave that my absolute all. Anyone that defeated me, I made sure they had to fight tooth and nail.
Mm-hmm.
Then as a result of losing that, he obviously went into the final. And I had one last fight for a bronze medal
mm-hmm.
from an Egyptian guy there. This is why I love the fight game. Because like literally anything can happen.
Yep.
Anything can happen. And like, the fight's only 5 minutes long. It feels so much longer. I'm not sure if you've competed. I haven't competed before,
but
so much longer.
In Team Nogueira, every day is competition.
Yes, exactly. And for great things, I heard that's an unbelievable facility to train out over the coaches and everything like that. So we'll definitely have to roll something.
Yes, we should.
So anyway, long story short, compete in the bronze match and I was winning 4-1. And in the last 60 seconds, I made a couple of rookie mistakes. He passed my guard, got side control, knee on belly,
mm-hmm.
and it went 5-4 in the last 10 seconds and he won.
Knee on belly is tricky.
Tricky. So he beat me by one point, but it's funny. We were both on our knees, exhausted. Taking into consideration, this fight was at 2 p.m. in the day. My first fight was at 10:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I weighed in at 9 a.m. I had no food the entire day.
Mm-hmm.
I only had 2 liters of water.
Did you have to cut a lot of weight?
No.
Okay, so you
the weight was 85 kilos. I walk around at about 82 and a half, 83.
Okay, cool.
Well, I weighed in the morning because we didn't get the weigh in the day before because we flew in late.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no food and no water around the area. So I had to fight all those at 2 p.m. still fasted, no food, only a liter and a half of water in me. It was tough. But again, I embraced that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I shared that with my clients. And I will talk about it more with them this week. And I wanted to share it here is because when you're pursuing your goals and champion success, things rarely go to plan. And like, how do you respond when life throws a spanner in the work? There's me. I could have played the victim. I could have whinged. Mm. I could have moaned. I could have complained. I've no food. This is so unfair. They're going to have an advantage. I just took it on the chin. I was like, okay, Lee, these are the cards that life are dealing you with right now. It's going to be even more enjoyable when you overcome these challenges placed in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So back to your question around training. Jiu-jitsu, currently doing that 4 or 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running twice a week because I'm doing my first marathon next March in Barcelona.
Sweet.
So I'm going to be training.
Good luck.
I'm going to be training for that. Thank you very much. I'm going to be training for that come November. So I'm currently doing four jiu-jitsu sessions a week, two runs and two weight training sessions per week, which is very different because I used to do weight six times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I did my first weight training session there on the weekend. On Saturday was my first one in 2 weeks.
Okay. So what kind of training are you doing? Are you doing more explosive training?
Yeah, I'm doing one strength training session and then the other one is more power and sort of explosive plyometric work.
Got it.
So it's a nice change. My goals now are more performance based rather than the physicality of essentially how I look. So yeah, that's essentially how my training is set up. Lastly, in terms of nutrition, that's the only thing we didn't really cover here. Really, really simple. I like simplicity over complexity. I don't track calories. I don't do any of that stuff. I've been doing this for 16 years now. I don't think it's impressive that I'm able to stay in shape year round and not track calories. If I wasn't able to do that, I think there would actually be something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If I've been living like this way for 16 years, I should be able to do it with ease. So I keep it super simple, 3 meals per day, breakfast, lunch and dinner. And I allow myself to have a lot more freedom on the weekends. I'll eat out Friday, Saturday and Sunday night every single week. And during the week, I'll try to keep my food selection pretty normal, pretty consistent, pretty basic. Good carbohydrate sources, fruit, vegetables, lean protein sources, healthy fats. And again, I know that just gives me a buffer where I can have a little bit more flexibility on the weekend for socializing, spending time with my partner, and so on and so forth.
I'm sure everyone wants to hear, what are you eating on the weekends?
I am a burger addict.
Okay, cool. I love burgers.
Are you a burger as well?
Yeah.
I would nearly class myself as a burger connoisseur in the boy at this rate. I know I've only been here for 3 years.
You've got to tell me where to go.
I found some great spots. There is a place, I think it's in Jumeirah actually, it's called Meet Me There.
I randomly found
this place after googling best burger joints in Dubai.
Cool.
Right, and when you get there you'll be a bit surprised because it's not a fancy restaurant. You get to it and you'll be like, this just looks like a very standard takeaway. But the quality of the burger and the fries, unbelievable. That's Meet Me There in Jumeirah. I've no affiliates, no partnership. I definitely should it this way.
But if you work for Meet Me There, then you should hire this guy because he's a good marketer.
they know me in there. I'm there every single weekend. And then in terms of like, let's say, if you want like really good quality, the best burger I've ever had has to be Salt Bay.
Salt Bay, yeah.
The burger restaurant here, Salt Bay, that was absolutely incredible. So yeah, I think that more or less, I think unless I missed anything in terms of the weekly with the planning, the structure, the exercise, scheduling, fun for me. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is fun. That's definitely one thing that I've taken up to increase my focus and flow.
And it's a long-term goal. Like it's, are you in for the long game, like 10 years, black belt, all that stuff?
Huge respect to anyone that does Jiu-Jitsu because it is such an art of discipline. The belts, getting them is a huge, I suppose, response and admiration for your consistency.
Yeah, just showing up every day is
100%. I'm in love with the skill building. Belts all good, but I just obsess with the skill building. It's like, because the more you learn, the more you realize, the less you actually know.
Yeah, you don't know
the more. Yeah, the more master you become with something like that, the more of a beginner you actually feel.
Yeah.
So definitely for long haul. I think I'm flying to Doha in Qatar at the end of next month to compete in another competition.
Sweet.
And then I'm going to be competing in the World Championships in Abu Dhabi in November.
That's cool. I'll come see you. I'll be in your car.
Will you?
I will not be competing, but I'll come see you guys. I have a lot of support.
Oh man, I appreciate it.
So we've covered a lot of things and it was great. I'm so grateful that we had this conversation. I think we have to kind of catch up a lot more.
Connect again.
We are on the same page in most of the things. If people want to learn more about you, what's the best way? Is your Instagram handle the best or your website?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram, Mr. Lee Hands. I'm also on LinkedIn if you just search Lee Hands. And then the website is www.leanintolife.co. If you want to find out more about what we do, our ethos, our missions, client results, and even there's a ton of free downloads and stuff like that on my social media and on my website as well.
Amazing. So you can get that blueprint downloaded free. And I know whenever someone says free, everyone gets excited. So there you go, guys.
But you have to promise me, you have to implement it.
Yes. There will be a lot of knowledge, but implementation is your choice. So make that choice, right? Lee, before you go today, if you had a time machine, in the beginning of this show, you took us back, you rewinded time in a few seconds. So let's go back. If you could rewind time and you could give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be? I mean, you could tell yourself to buy Bitcoin, but like apart from that, it doesn't have to be inhaled, but in anything.
I have a great one, and it's probably going to resonate and relate with a lot of people. I really think that vulnerability is one of the greatest forms of leadership. And I definitely think we live in a world now, especially from a male perspective, where a lot of people, both male, both female, but like, let's talk about males struggling with mental health issues, depression, especially men find it extremely difficult to open up around their vulnerabilities and what they perceive are their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And they don't like talking about things. And me personally now, I've learned and I believe that vulnerability is one of the greatest forms of leadership. So if I could go back in time, I would definitely tell my younger self to embrace being vulnerable so much more sooner, because we all know growing up, especially as a man, we might have tendencies to have this almost alpha male attitude where we don't like talking about our flaws, we don't like talking about our weaknesses, we don't like talking about emotions because emotions mean weakness, and we don't like being vulnerable around the things that scare us and that we're afraid of. And now I'm at a stage where I embrace being vulnerable all the time with my clients, with myself, in my relationships. I've done a lot of therapy. I've done a lot of work on myself on this, around all of these things. And I truly think that if I could go back in time, one of the pieces of advice I would give myself would be just to embrace being vulnerable a lot sooner, because I definitely spent a lot of my years operating with a lot of dark energy and maybe a chip on my shoulder and feeling like that I could never show weakness and I can never talk about these things, and I always had to present myself that everything was going right and I was never struggling, all these things. But now it's the other side of the coin, like we talked about on this episode here today, huge advocate of embracing all the struggles, all the flaws, all the weaknesses, all the setbacks, all the challenges, because if you can identify those things and you take responsibility and ownership for those things, I know if I did that sooner, I'd be 10 years ahead by now.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where all the success is, identifying those weaknesses, identifying those gaps. And it takes a lot of courage to take ownership and responsibility around the areas that you currently have fault in. But we're all human, and everyone on this planet in this lifetime are capable of truly immense things. Immense things. It just comes down to you believing that you're truly capable and actually worthy of that. And I think starting to identify and take ownership or responsibility around the things that maybe you're not so good at, so then you can lean into those things and improve your skill set, improve your confidence, improve your belief. Allow yourself to be a beginner. What did I do for jiu-jitsu? Perfect example of me embracing being vulnerable. I was willing to be a beginner, look like an idiot, get things wrong, make
in 3.5 months, definitely
be a failure. And I was dealing with injuries, and it never let it stop me. I was dealing with injuries. I had to stop training. I would only go to half training sessions, but I kept moving forward. And here's me traveling to Egypt after 3.5 months of training and getting in the arena with people that have maybe doing it a lot longer, maybe more skilled. But I didn't let any of those fears hold me back, because realistically, that's the only thing that holds people back from achieving a championship. It's fear.
Fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of discomfort.
Fear. And I'll leave it on this. I told you I was a talker.
You make my life easier.
If we were to break fear down into three worries, this is essentially how I would describe fear. And this is ultimately the only thing that holds people back from achieving success, moving forward and achieving championship. And you'll be able to relate to maybe one of your listeners on the line right now, and just go all in on that. Worry number one. Worry of not succeeding, i.e. I'm going to fail, so I should not even try. Number two, worry of other people's opinions. If I try this, I'm going to be judged and people are going to mock me and criticize me. So then therefore, I should play small and play safe, because I don't want anyone to judge me. Number three, worry of what I will lose if I do succeed. This is a big one for a lot of people on health and fitness journeys. But if I do succeed the great body that I'm going after, then therefore I will have to make so many sacrifices and I will lose my nights out with my friends, drinking every single weekend, binge watching Netflix at nighttime, over consuming food. My opinion, ultimately, they're the three worries that can be broken down into what fear is based upon. And again, if awareness is everything, that's the first step of any sort of change, awareness and ownership and responsibility. And if you can become aware around your faults and realistically your self-destructive, self-sabotaging behaviors, if it's any of those three, Now you have to lean into those. Or you have to lean into life. No pun intended.
Lean into life, yeah.
No pun intended. And you have to go after your dreams, because anybody is capable of leaning into all those stuff. What I did, going to Egypt, for example, let's use that as an example. Most people would be like, that's crazy. Why would you do that? Anyone's capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's the people that actually do move forward do so without allowing their emotions to hold them back.
It's a mindset and completely mindset game.
Can I move forward and take action to things I know I need to do, regardless of how I'm feeling? That is a superpower.
And I'm happy that you're sharing the superpower with us. And for you guys should be lucky to be listening to all of this, because this is not out of a textbook. Everything that he's mentioned is life experiences, and you have so much to learn from life than to learn from textbooks. On that note, Lee, thank you for doing all the good work you've been doing. I'm so happy the universe connected us, because I'm sure we'll have so much to talk and discuss and all of that stuff, but we'll leave it here. Maybe, who knows, we'll do a round two sometime. Yeah. Thank you for coming on.
CJ, thank you so much for having me.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.